I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Sound Waves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we're all about the beer. We talk to the folks behind Bonneville Brewing, as well as getting the latest beer news from Mike Riedel, our resident beer expert. For those of you who don't get out there to the Tooele, Utah area very often, Bonneville Brewing is a brew pub based way out there west. They launched under a new name in 2013 after being originally founded as All Star Brewing the previous year. They've produced 8 spirits so far, mostly ales with a small selection of seasonal brews, and they've expanded from their own pub to having their beer offered at select SLC locations, such as Avenues Proper in the Bayou. Slug writer Mike Riedel chatted with the head brewer Dave Watson about the brewery's history and what they're working on next.
There's a bit of a history going on in Tooele with this particular brewery. We'll get to that in a sec, but first, how the hell did you get into this?
I grew up in New Mexico, and in college I studied photojournalism, and I was a photographer for a while. And I always, you know, let's say, yeah, in my early 20s is when I discovered craft beer. I was one of those people that kind of like, beer, not really very interested in it. But then some of the people I was associating with, it's like, we just got this Fat Tire or something. And I was just like, whoa, that's something different. And so I started drinking craft beer. And then I can pinpoint the moment that I got into the idea of brewing, not that I started, but I took a technical writing class in college, and we had group assignments to describe a process. And I have no idea what process my group did. It was something that's lost to the ages. But some other group did beer brewing, and they went to the local brew pub, and they talked to them there. And when they gave their presentation, that's when the light went off in my head. Like, this is fascinating. I want to learn more about this.
And that's when you first began thinking about, this is something I'd really be interested in doing.
Yeah. And at that point, it wasn't even a glimmer of an idea of doing it professionally. It was just, I think that's cool. And it took a little while for my living situation to be right that I could just set up and start homebrewing. But once I did, I was one of those guys that was like, I'll try that. I did it once, and then I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm doing this. And then it was just nonstop.
So from New Mexico, how did you end up in the Salt Lake City area?
Well, there's this beautiful young woman.
How many stories have started this way?
To make a long story short, the woman who's now my wife and the mother of my child was my girlfriend at the time, and she got a job here in Salt Lake. It had never crossed my mind that I might live in Salt Lake City someday. Just, it was one of those things that never really entered my head. But then once the idea got in my head, I started looking into it, and I was like, this place is really cool. And I started to get really excited to come here.
So you had a photojournalism background. Did you start looking at newspapers, TV, or did you just like, nah, maybe this is my thing?
I didn't push real hard to get back into journalism, because at that point, I had stopped working in newspapers and was teaching photo classes at the university and working in the brew pub.
Which brew pub?
High Desert Brewing in Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is a little bit larger than this studio, but not much.
A large bathroom, basically.
Yes. But, you know, it was a great introduction and, you know, a really cool place to work. And then when we moved up here, I was basically just looking for a job. And of course, I started looking for things that, you know, fit my skill set. And I started out working at the Beer Nut doing
the homebrew supply.
Yeah. And then not long after that, Chris Haas over at Desert Edge was looking for an assistant. And I put my hat in the ring and I did that for a couple of years.
So beer was pretty much paying the bills for a little while. The homebrew supply store plus Desert Edge at the same time?
They were different. I started at the homebrew supply, then I went full-time at Desert Edge doing, you know, Saturdays at the homebrew supply store. And then I went to be the assistant manager at the Beer Nut, so I came back to do that for a couple of years.
What were you able to pick up at Desert Edge over at the pub?
Oh, a lot. I learned a lot there. There were things that we did as a matter of course that, you know, looking back, I was like, how did we ever make anything right? my little pub, you know, they make some great beer, but a little unorthodox sometimes. It's kind of like just a big home brewery,
right? Because it's gotten bigger, but back when you started, it was a small little room, wasn't it? Yeah, you make a beer out of?
Oh, at Desert Edge?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in the basement. So I was lucky enough to be there at the time that we actually moved the brewery upstairs. And so that was a really great experience to be able to be a part of that, tearing everything down, craning the tanks upstairs, putting them in place, plumbing them in. If you're in the brewery business, that's a really good experience to know how to do that.
Because I came in handy for your next gig.
Yes.
And we'll get to that in a sec, but how many years did you spend over at Desert Edge?
I was there about 2 years.
And from there, you left there for a little while?
Yeah, and I went to the Beer Nut to be the assistant manager.
And that's got to be helpful, too, for a brewer or anybody interested in making beers, is having all the basics, all the knowledge, all the products that anybody would need to be a creative or technical home brewer, or brewer, period.
Oh, yeah. I learned so much. I would say I even learned more working in a homebrew shop. You know, you learn your process basics, and you know, you learn some really important things working in a brewery. But a homebrew shop, especially one as active as the one here with so many homebrewers, a really active community, it's just a melting pot. Like, everybody's coming in with a new idea and a new, you know, it's like, oh, what have you heard about this? Have you ever done this? What about these? You know, and it really kind of shakes you out of any habits you might get in of like, oh, you know, I always go for Maris Otter or something. You know, it's like, well, why not try this other base malt? Why not try these?
You got a crazy homebrewer bouncing something weird off you never, probably never thought of, and you're like,
yeah, hey, that happens so many times. Go. People ask, well, what do you think? Have you ever done this? And I'm like, no, that never crossed my mind. But now that I'm thinking about it, let's figure it out. Let's learn more about it. And so you come away with a lot of knowledge.
So after that, Twilla comes knocking. And yeah. Twilla's got has got a bit of history with brew pubs, and in particular Trax, which I believe came out about 12 years ago.
Yeah, it's got to be close to that now, yeah.
Give me some background on what Trax was, whatever knowledge you have. I know you were never part of Trax.
No, yeah, I had never been there until it was out of business by the time I actually darkened the door there.
But you occupied their spot.
Yeah.
And you...
And so I've learned a lot of the history. It started out with really great intentions. You know, the idea was to make a really nice brew pub, and just some circumstances along the way, things started to maybe go a little downhill, and by the time we got in there, there was some cleaning that needed to be done.
Yeah. Do you think it was a market thing? Do you think they were too ahead of their time for that time? Because I know they had an identity problem, being whether they were a brew pub or a sports bar. Was that population out there on the other side of the Oakers not ready for craft beer, or do you think it just wasn't?
It's a challenge, and especially 12 years ago, I think it's a monumental challenge, because it's not a big population base, and then you have to cut out a large part of the population that is not interested in the product you're producing, and then find another part of the population who are interested in trying a new thing that's, you know, maybe a little bit unfamiliar,
a little education with some nice food.
Yeah.
When you were asked to take over, was that a difficult decision for you to make? Like, you know, are these people ready for what we're about to do? Or
crossed my mind. When it first came up, you know, the details were a little bit sketchy. I was, the first time somebody says, oh, they're looking for somebody at Trax. And I was like, I think try number whatever is not going to be the right one, no matter what I can do. But then I found out that it was in completely new hands and was being done over completely.
And how did they approach you with this new opportunity?
Well, they were looking for somebody else. They called looking for Rio. And I happen to be the guy answering the phone. I said, no, he's not here today. Can I take a message?
And when you say Rio, you're speaking of Rio
Connolly
from
Avenues Proper. And at that time, the Avenues Proper was a little glint in Rio's eye, mm-hmm. and a couple other guys' eyes. They were serious about it, and I knew what was going on, but it was not yet for public knowledge, because
right.
You know, it wasn't a sure thing yet. It was in the early stages. So I told him, look, they're looking for a brewer, and I know what you got going on. I didn't tell him anything about that, but if they're looking for somebody, I'd be happy to talk to him. At that point, I didn't know at all where it was, who it was, anything about it. It's just kind of looking for a brewer.
Tell me about how they pitched it to you, what was going to be different.
It was, the place was being gutted. The name was going away, and it was being reborn as a new business. It was four or five, six. It's kind of a funny shaped building. Walls.
It's a nice place.
It's a beautiful place.
I mean, you can't miss it. When you're coming into Tooele, I mean, you look over west of the freeway overpass there where the train tracks are. It's a gorgeous building.
It's beautiful. Brick and steel, and it's really nice. Essentially, that was just taken down to the bones and rebuilt. So a lot of the time that when I first started actually brewing there, that was in October of 2012, and it was still an active construction site. So every day there was some new challenge of some wall coming down or windows being pulled out or the floor being polished, like ground down. So I'm trying to brew while there's just this massive machines tearing up the building around
some me. Guy's laying sheetrock right above you while you're trying to mash in, right?
Oh, that happened. That happened.
So how are things now? I mean, you've been brewing for over a year now, right?
Actually, October will be 2 years.
October's 2 years. Mm-hmm. Wow. Tell me about your vision now. What's going on at Bonneville?
Well, we are taking our first steps into some pretty serious-minded distribution. We just signed on with a distributor who's going to help get our product to our location because our ownership also owns all the All-Star Lanes bowling centers. And so that's a big portion of where our beer goes. And the distributor is going to help us with that because we're doing it ourselves. And it's
pretty backbreaking.
It's tough work. And with a small staff, it's myself and my assistant that takes up kind of a lot of time. And so having the distributor on board is going to help with that and free us up to produce more beer and also be able to enter some new venues. So you know, hopefully we'll start seeing our handles popping up in bars where people like good craft beer.
And I see them around quite a bit, actually. And what type of beers are you making?
Wide variety, ranging from light golden ale. We've got a couple of wheat beers. We've got an American-style Hefeweizen, a Belgian white, American amber ale, American pale ale.
Pretty much got the gambit.
Yeah.
Is it a technical thing for you? I mean, I'm pretty hard on a lot of local beers because it's not easy to make a low-alcohol beer for this market. And I think you've got some really good technically made beers. I mean, when I have the beer, I know exactly what it is. I don't have to look at the style. I can just taste it and go, pale ale, Irish red, stout. You know exactly what you're drinking.
Good. That's kind of what I'm going for. I've never been a real crazy
rhubarb IPA.
Like, even in my homebrewing days, it was always just like, I'm going to make the best beer that I, you know, my goal was not for somebody to say, wow, I've never had anything like that before. You notice I didn't say anything about is good or not. It's just different. I want them to pick up the glass and say, yeah, all right, I'm going to drink that. And then I'm going to drink another one. That's always been kind of my philosophy because that's what I want. I wasn't looking to freak myself out. I wanted to make good quality beer for myself to drink when I was a home brewer, and I've just kind of taken that philosophy on. I'll go a little crazy from time to time.
Like you should.
Yeah. Every now and then, I'll color outside the lines.
And it seems to be well-received because you just did a huge expansion, right?
We brought in some new stainless. We expanded the fermentation capacity by 150% and bright beer by, I think it was 80-some percent.
So people are responding. And it's getting out of Tooele. It used to be you have the distribution network of the bowling lanes.
Yeah.
And now the bars. And it seems to really be taking off. And you got a little bit of recognition from the North American Brewers Association a couple of months ago.
Yeah, we picked up a couple medals. We got a silver for our Irish Red. And a bronze for our amber.
And that's not bad for somebody who's not been in the market for very long.
Yeah, I'm happy. We've all together in the 2 years we've been brewing, we brought 4 medals, 2 silvers and 2 bronze.
That's great.
I haven't cracked that gold yet, but next time.
Yeah. Once you get to a gold,
Then you just.
So what's next at Bonneville?
Right now we're just focusing on getting our beer out there. You know, we want more people to have access to it. You know, we've got a couple ideas of what kind of the next seasonals might be down the pipe a little ways. But the current focus is just now that we're going through a distributor, we can start trying to see our handles in more places and get more volume out. You know, everybody always asks, like, about packaging, bottling, or canning if I had my druthers. That's definitely something under discussion. There's no active plans right now. That's a big investment.
It is.
And it's a whole other ball game. That's definitely something we're considering because that's an important segment. So many people drink beer at home or take it. You know, they stop by the grocery store and they pick up some beer on the way to a barbecue. Just the majority of beer is consumed that way. And so if you're not there, you're missing out on a lot of people who might be trying your product.
And speaking of people that want to try your product, what's on tap right now?
The seasonal we've got right now is the Sun Twist, which is a kind of a golden ale base. It's different than our house golden ale, but it's kind of, you know, still a golden ale base, but it's made with juiced ginger and lemon peel. So it's really kind of summery.
It sounds summery.
It's got, it actually started out life as a homebrew that I did for my wife's baby shower. So I did this, you know, she had a baby shower, and of course it's like, well, I'm going to make beer for her baby shower. And
like you do.
Like you do. You know, when you're a brewer, certain things
your
are expected
of you. Typical Utah baby shower, yeah, that's what you do.
So when we were looking for a new season, I kind of pulled a little off the tap and took it and said, what do you think about this? And they said, great, let's do that. And so we did it. And so the secret name is my daughter's name. It was even a secret at the time of the baby shower, but the secret name of that beer is the Imogenger, because it was made for Imogen, my daughter's baby shower. But the official name is the Sun Twist.
Nice. If people want to check out your beers, where are you located at in Twilla?
1641 North Main Street. It's basically as soon as you cross the Twilla city limit and you go over kind of a viaduct, it's on your right-hand side. It's a little bit wonky. You have to, you know, you cross into Twilla, you go up and you see it on your right-hand side. You have to drive past it, then make a right and drive back to it. So it's kind of in a little corner there. But once you see it, you say, okay, I can get there.
All the best things are worth working for, right?
Yeah.
For more info on the brewery and the fine drinks coming out of Twilla, visit them online at BonnevilleBrewery.com.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie!
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning Tuesday, August 26th, and running through September 1st. Yes, we are heading into September, people. That is hard to believe. There's all kinds of goodies in there. I suggest you go to slugmag.com, scroll to the bottom of that homepage, check out that calendar for yourself. There's always new listings being added. I found some good ones myself when I delved in. Starting on Tuesday, the 26th, this is a throwback kind of show. We have a couple of throwback shows, actually. We have The Offspring, Pennywise, and Stiff Little Fingers bringing a big slab of old punk rock to the Complex on Tuesday night. And over at the Depot right nearby, it's Jeff Tate of Queensryche doing his last tour being able to use the Queensryche name thanks to some weird legalities and all that kind of bullshit. Thank you to That Metal Show for giving me that information. On Wednesday, 8/27, it is Bluegrass and Barbecue at Utah Natural History Museum. This is a new series they have going up there. Really cool building, well worth a visit no matter what you're doing or what time of day. But checking out a little music and getting some barbecue seems like a good excuse. That's on Wednesday, the 27th. Thursday, the 28th of August, Reverend Horton Heat returns to the Depot. Same night, it's the final Twilight Concert Series show over at Pioneer Park, featuring The Head and the Heart. Just saw them myself up in Idaho Way. Really fine live band if you've never seen them. A little on the folk rock side. Pretty good stuff, though. On Friday, the 29th of August, Earth, Wind, and Fire at Red Butte Garden. If you love Earth, Wind, and Fire, and you should, you will love the live show. They really deliver still all these years later. Over at Kilby Court on Friday night, Sylvan Esso headlines. That should be a really hot show. Up and coming right there. On the 30th of August, Blackberry Smoke brings a little classic rock sound to the stateroom. On Sunday night, the 31st, it's the Geek Show movie night at Broovies. And finally, I would say this is the show of the week, Swans at Urban Lounge on Monday, September 1st. Carla Bozulich opening the show. Fine double bill. You'll want to check that out. The Swans' new record is really great stuff. That is your weekly daily calendar for the week of August 26th. As I mentioned, go to slugmag.com. Check it out all the time. There's always new listings being added. If you throw shows, host bands, whatever, you can put your own listings on there for free. And for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add links to your own listings. We are oh so happy, as always, to bring Mike Riedel into the studio live to podcast form to talk about the latest beer news. Mike, welcome.
Missed you, baby.
It's been a while. Yeah, we've gone through a whole summer of swilling beers and other assorted spirits and whatnot. How's your summer been, generally speaking?
Beerific.
Beerific.
It's been a hot one.
Yeah. Thanks for good drinking.
Drinking a
lots
shitload
of session
lagers.
Drinking.
Oh, yeah. Really.
Yeah, big time.
Seriously, anybody offers me anything over 8%, I'm like,
yeah, let's wait a little bit.
Anything a little quenching.
I'm gonna drink like 6 in a hurry here. Well, why don't we delve in? We're gonna talk about a bunch of new beers that are coming online from our local breweries, or maybe coming from out of town. What's the top of your agenda?
We got both. We've got stuff coming in from out of state. We've got some local stuff that's awesome. We'll start with a couple locals. Uintas. Cahoots is their collaborative series with local homebrewers.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
They've done that the last couple of years, and this year they've done a collaboration, and this is a saison. It's the first saison they've ever made, and at least true saison.
And this came from a homebrewers?
This came from homebrewers.
Recipe,
and,
nice.
And I'm totally losing his name, but I apologize, brother. But this is a nice, kind of Americanized saison. A lot of American hops in this. If you're not familiar with saisons, they're somewhat light. It's a summer beer.
Yeah.
Saison, French for season. Estuary from the yeast that they use. And so you get a little bit of coriander, a little bit of clove.
Ooh.
Notes, and then with the addition of the with the American hops, you get a nice grapefruit profile.
Okay.
You get a little orange peel.
Damn.
And grains of paradise, which adds a nice spiciness to it also.
Yeah,
all this
tasty.
It makes it sound like it's a heavier beer, but it's really light and really refreshing.
Yeah, sounds pretty summery, which is good since we're still going to be hot for another month or so.
It is, and this is it's a nice beer. It comes in a 750 cork and cage bottle.
Okay, nice. Cahoots.
And you can definitely get it at Uintas Bottle Shop.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's going to be in liquor stores or not.
Yeah, it might be a pretty small batch.
I would call Uintas and make sure about that.
Okay. That sounds delicious. As always, when we start talking about the beer, I just start drooling a little bit over here on the microphone.
I know. I got to start.
Oh, hints of grapefruit. Mm.
I need to start bringing something. Help. One beer that Epic said would never come to Utah was their Escape to Colorado IPA, and this was brewed for the Colorado market, only for the Colorado market. But then Epic got a canning line, and they wanted to get in cans, so they started making a lot of beer, and they were making more than they probably thought they were going to make. And they're like, got to get this in Utah. Got it in cans, it's easy to ship, it's easy to manage.
Yeah.
And so they've got Escape to Colorado, which is a nice mosaic-hopped IPA, and Mosaic is a recent hop. It's a fairly new hop style variety, and it's a lot of grapefruit, mango, tropical fruits.
Oh, wow.
It's a really nice IPA. It's in a 12-ounce can, which is a lot nicer than a 22-ounce bottle if you're all by yourself.
Yeah, right. Those IPAs tend to be ass kickers. Yeah.
Yeah. And their Hop Syndrome, which is their very hoppy lager, is also in a 12-ounce can.
Wow.
And those are in select liquor stores right now.
Damn.
And
Epic is a company with a plan right from the jump. Already got cans going.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I think you need to fill out your market and see what people really want. And I think if you notice around, people are going to cans, smaller packaging,
totally
more manageable. That's what people want.
Yeah, for sure.
And you got to keep up.
Yeah, especially if you're like floating around on rivers and whatnot, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Hell of a lot easier than dealing with a big bottle, you know?
stick in the backpack.
That's right.
Stick in the canoe.
It's the way.
So that's pretty much the more local releases from major breweries.
Some good sounding beers. Mm.
And then we go to Shipyard Brewing. Yeah, they're on the East Coast. I want to say Maine.
Okay.
They've been threatening to come into the market for a while. We first heard about Shipyard not last St. Patrick's Day, but the St. Patrick's Day before.
Oh, wow.
When they had a sign in the St. Patty's Day parade.
Oh, really?
And we're all looking, going, is that Shipyard? What the hell is
what's that doing here?
Yeah. It's like, well, I guess they're coming. And then 16 months later, they show up.
Just took them a little while to navigate.
Yeah, it's a long walk.
Peculiar.
It's a long walk for me.
That's right.
And they've come into the market with a smashed blueberry, which is a nice porter.
I'm fearful.
With a blueberry
hint
taste,
or is it more of a
it's between a smack and a bitch slap.
Okay, yeah,
it's gut, the berry's definitely there. The blueberry's definitely there. But it's got a nice chocolatey base, which is kind of gives it a nice desserty taste.
Yeah.
So I think you'd really like that one.
Okay.
And their export ale, which is basically a British style bitter.
Oh, okay.
And so it's not like what you're used to if you're like American bitter ales. This one is mostly piney,
okay,
floral, and a little grassy.
Mm. I'm glad they're coming into the market with more than just a fruity beer.
Yeah.
I want to sample something more straightforward, I guess, if that's the right word.
And it's not exactly fruity. It's more vegetable, but they do a killer pumpkin ale.
Ah.
And that is coming in very soon because
in time for fall, yeah.
It's very highly regarded, and we'll give you an update when that's in.
Yeah.
And get out and try that one as soon as it arrives.
Well, actually, yeah, I like a pumpkin ale here and there myself. I've had some tasty ones, local and regional.
They definitely remind you of fall.
Yeah, no doubt. It's like just seems like, oh, it's October. It's time for a little pumpkin ale to make an appearance. Mm-hmm. Some nutmeg.
A little allspice, a little
throw it in there.
A little bourbon.
That's right.
And one that you might be surprised to try, which I would recommend you at least give it a shot, are a couple from Blue Moon.
Mm.
Blue Moon Brewing, which is an arm of Coors. They've got Pine in the Neck, which is a American-style IPA. And it is, just as it sounds, it's a piney, hoppy, nice tasting IPA.
Is that a new thing for them? Like a new product for them, or just new to us?
Yeah, the Blue Moon labels has been kind of their experimental arm.
Okay.
And they've mostly stuck with
that Belgian
lighter Belgian styles.
Okay.
And a few lagers.
Nice. Pine in the Neck. I like the name. I'll give them that already.
And it's not too bad. Go out and try it. And it's at liquor stores. It's not at grocery stores.
Oh, okay.
It's a liquor store. So it's a little higher ABV.
All right.
And their Rounder, which is a Belgian IPA, and that one's really nice. It's, I wouldn't say really nice, but it's nice.
Yeah.
It's a little peppery, not a little spiciness to it.
Okay.
And that's the way you get most Belgian pales and IPAs.
Okay.
They have a little more estuary notes from the yeast, the little funky yeast they use in Belgium versus what we use, here in the States and the rest of Europe. And it's got a nice caramel base, floral hops.
Nice. Wow. Well, Blue Moon coming with some new varieties in there. Excellent.
Yeah, so check those out. And those are both at liquor stores, not grocery stores.
Yeah, perfect.
And then a couple of minor notes. I wouldn't say minor notes. That's not what I want to be insulting. but the Hop Bombshells, they're a local all-female homebrewing club.
Yeah.
They teamed up with the Annex out in Sugar House. That's Epic's
little restaurant area restaurant thing. Pub. Yep.
And they brewed a ESB, extra special bitter, from one of their members, Tiffany Steele. She came up with an award-winning ESB recipe that won in a national competition.
Ooh.
And so they brewed it up there. That's on right now.
Awesome.
And it's called Extra Special Bombshell ESB.
Nice.
And it's really nice. Nice hoppy bomb. It's a nice hoppy ESB. ESB. Extra Special Bitters aren't necessarily bitter, really bitter.
Right.
This one is.
Okay.
And it's really nice.
It's a good excuse to go to the Annex, if I ever heard one.
It's a damn good excuse.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend trying it. Had it the other day.
Nice.
It's a nice, tasty beer.
Excellent.
And, of course, after all the bullshit that was happening with the DABC regarding Snowbird's Oktoberfest, it's upon us.
It's going to happen.
It's here.
Yeah.
And you can go up and you can go to Oktoberfest in Snowbird and get a goddamn beer.
Yahoo! Listen to a little polka, all those
fun things. The music's there, the food's there, and
I hope they have the mechanical bowl still there. That's always a draw for me.
Nothing says Oktoberfest like a mechanical bowl.
That's right. One of those Matterhorns next to a mechanical bowl. Awesome. Lots of goodies, lots of good things to sample. And next time you're on, we'll be talking, I'm sure, about fall seasonal beers and whatnot. Delicious.
They're creeping up on us.
Mike, where can we find you on a day-to-day basis?
At the Utah Beer Blog. Just Google Utah Beer, it'll show up, or utahbeer.blogspot.com.
And, of course, every issue of Slug Magazine as well.
Woohoo!
Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks again for listening to Slug Soundwaves, and for all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. We're going to have Jimmy Martin, our resident movie guru, back in the studio soon to discuss the fall movie schedule, and we want to hear what you're most looking forward to seeing this upcoming season. Send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com, or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves, or on Facebook at facebook.com/SlugSoundwaves. We just might bring up your suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Genevieve Smith, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. Technical design by Kate Colgan. Join us next week. We'll be talking to our good friend, Bad Brad Wheeler. Thanks for listening.